Get on with it, Macca.
Thanks for joining me for our Easter podcast, a snapshot of Australia on our longest of long weekends. And it's the best way to travel on the long weekend. No crowds on the podcast.
Professors, engineers, geologists, faceters, surveyors and speleologists are ringing from the rock on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, Macca in the morning turns my week around. He picks me up when I feel down.
I wait all week for Macca on a Sunday morning.
Ooh, it's cold this morning for Nancy's chooks. They're walking dogs, they're writing books.
As Trevor stacks his bottles by the roadside.
On you, Trev. In Toorak, T.I., Tumbarumba, at the Lodge and Yarralumla. They might be listening to Macca on a Sunday morning. My week starts with Macca on a Sunday morning.
Isn't amazing? Both of us, good morning and welcome, wherever you are. On this Easter Sunday morning, I've got a song to play about that too. G'day, this is Macca.
Hello, Macca.
G'day.
Hello, Macca.
Yeah.
Hello, Macca. Yeah, Fred Bishop, Tribunder, Tasmania. What I'm ringing about, you got me, have you?
I've got you. Yeah, I've got you.
Oh, good on you, mate. Good on you, mate. Yeah. I was ringing up about what, and there's a young Aboriginal boy from Dirranbandi in Southwest Queensland won the 1910 stall gift.
Right.
His name was Tom Dancy.
Tom Dancy. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. There's probably not too many people know that, but anyway, I married a girl from Dirranbandi, actually,
uh-huh.
when I was out there shearing, and she's a long-distance relation of his. So I just thought, you know, the stall gift's on today, I think, isn't it?
Oh, well, tomorrow I think it's on, the final. The final's tomorrow, but, they've been running all weekend. Great place.
Okay.
You've been there, Fred, have you?
No, not the stall gift, no.
Why not? Why not? You're related.
Yeah, it should be, mate, yeah. No, anyway, but they reckon out in Dirranbandi there, he trained a lot of emus around the house where he lived there, and they reckon he'd pace them, he'd run after the emu and keep up to him for a certain while.
Well, emus can run at about 40 k's an hour, so he'd be doing...
They can get going,
He'd be doing well to keep up with an emu. So.
He'd get up on them, but they'd get away from him, but, you know, he's, that's the way he trained, apparently, so they told me.
Tommy Dancy, eh? Tom Dancy. It's a great place to be, you know, down there with people. There's a few other running festivals around Australia, but that's probably one of the longest going and has a great tradition and a great history of all sorts of people, like the two brothers that were twins, right? And they roughly the story is that the one of the brothers could run, the other couldn't run run out of sight in a dark night, and the semi-finals, the running twin, he won every race, and he was in the final, right? But that night, like the Sunday night, out on the town he's out in the town, he's drinking and he's eating and he's going mad, and he was half. So they said, no, he's not going to win. So they bet the other bloke, and of course it was the twin. It was the twin who was out in the town, and the runner was home in bed sleeping, and because he got up and won. So that's just one of the stories of the stall gift. I hope I've got it half right. But Tommy Dancy, it'd be nice to talk to Tom, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, in 1981, that's
As my mate Rolly used to say, he'd say, wouldn't it be nice to go back 100 years and be able to talk to those people? Yeah.
That wouldn't be great. Yeah, I sure am Dirranbandi down around Gadooga and Walgett, Canamble, all through there.
And how did you end up in Tribunna?
Well, I'd born in Tassie, but I went over there shearing, you see.
I see.
Through southwest Queensland, and yeah.
Great memories, Fred. Great memories.
Oh, good memories, mate. Yeah. Another thing I'd like to say, Mac, if I can quickly, please. In 1964, I started as a rouseabout with Grasscross. That was a shearing company. Mm-hmm. And I worked a fair bit with sheds, in the big sheds too, 20 standards and 7 and 18 standards. I worked with a bloke called Brian Heath. He come from Wangaratta. His nickname was Slim, and I'd like to get in contact with him again. I'm sure if he's still alive, he'd be 78 my age, I reckon.
Oh, well, he's probably around. Well, if we hear from him, Freddie, you're in Tribunna, Freddie Bishop, you might get in touch. Otherwise, we'll get in touch and see what happens. But, Freddie, listen, I think you should put it on your list of things to do. You should be in stall next year, mate. I'm surprised you've been so tardy. You've got contact there. You know what I mean? You should be there telling your story.
Yeah, that's it, mate. Anyway, if anyone knows Slim or knows of him, I like it. He come from Wangaratta, just out of Wangaratta. He came here, and I know he had two.
Someone will know him, Freddie, and they'll get in touch with you, or they'll get in touch with us, and we'll get in touch with you. We've got your number, haven't we? Yep.
Yeah, you got the number, mate. Yeah, thanks, mate. Yeah, no, we had some good time. But Aussie dry over here, mate. Yeah. Real dry.
Is it? There you go. All right.
Well, especially a little bit of drizzle a day. Since Christmas, we've only had, 35 mils. That's all we've had.
Gee.
All right, mate. Thanks for taking me call, mate.
It's a pleasure, Fred. Nice to talk to you, mate. I'll see you sometime.
Good on you, mate. See you, mate.
See you, mate.
I just wanted to tell you, my daughter and her daughter went up to Townsville to see the Pink concert about 2 weeks ago because they couldn't get tickets down here.
They're keen.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, I couldn't hear you. Anyway, they know Townsville and they really like it up around Magnetic Island and everywhere. So they went up there. But my daughter said she's never ever had such a fantastic atmosphere. She said everything was pink. All the buildings were lit up pink. The rock behind Townsville was pink. And then everybody actually marched from the Strand. She said, it's the first time I've ever been in a parade. And there was bands playing and everything. And they marched all the way from the Strand all the way to the stadium on the other side of Townsville. She said the atmosphere was fantastic.
How the girls, I'm talking about Pink and Taylor Swift, have taken the country by storm. They've taken the country. They've just brained the place, haven't they?
They have. And also Townsville had never ever had anything like a pop concert there. So, it brought in people from Mount Isa and everywhere. People came from everywhere. So she said it was a better atmosphere than going to Sydney to see a concert.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet. I wonder why they had it in Townsville and say not in Cairns or not in Mackay. But Townsville's it's a big regional centre, really, Townsville.
It is, and it seems that somebody up there got behind it and just said, we've never ever had a concert up around here. You know, we have to travel everywhere and everything. And somebody got onto the promoters at Pink, and then she said that she'd do two concerts. So she did the Friday night and the Saturday night. The town was booked out.
So your name's Kay, is that right?
Yes, it is.
Kay,
it is.
Where did they have it? At the footy stadium? Or?
Yeah, at the footy stadium.
Yeah, that would have held, 30,000, 40,000, would it?
Yeah, there were lots there. Yeah, she said it was packed the two nights. So I'm not sure how many, but she said it was packed out. You couldn't get tickets. So, she just said it was the whole atmosphere of it. I mean, she went to Taylor Swift down here, but...
she's a desperate.
Yeah, all my grandchildren, the whole eight of them got tickets for Taylor Swift, so they were all excited. But I said, what was the difference in Pink and Taylor Swift? And she said, it was just the atmosphere in Townsville. She just found it amazing. She loved Taylor Swift, of course.
Well, my little 14-year-old concert goer said, went to both of them, and she said that Pink's songs were better. Taylor Swift's songs were better, but Pink was more visual, flying through the air and all that sort of stuff. So that was the deal. Yeah,
because my granddaughter, I said, did she come in on, did she fly in? And she said, yes. And she looked down and she waved to me when I waved to her.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. Good on you. I think that's a really good story for the town. I mean, they really promoted it, which is really good.
Yeah, I'll say. And they, as you said, the first time a really big star has been in Townsville. Yes. So that's great stuff. Good on you, Kay.
Okay, then. Thank you very much. Nice.
That's Ted, is it?
Hello, Macca. Yep. Ted Rowan. The club in the Scrubs having the Yabby races today, and I just wanted to see if I can get it out to the people.
Where are you, Ted?
We're around 70 k's north of Walgett and 70 k's west of Lightning Ridge.
Wow.
We're a little community, opal community. We've got the best seam opal in the world here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And what's it called, Rowan?
Rowan.
Yeah, right.
Grawin.
We have
our Yabby races today, yearly event.
How did it get that name, Grawin?
Oh, I got no idea. Haven't an idea.
Haven't got an idea. Okay.
I've been here over 30 years and over mining, and we have our Yabby races once a year, and they're today, and we get a huge crowd in today, and I just wanted to let people know.
So you got a crowd there?
Oh, yeah. They come from here. I don't know where they come from, but we've got a big crowd here today, 300 or 400 people.
And how have you gone in the last 30 years? You made a quid, have you?
Oh, yeah. I'm retired now. Yeah. But, yeah, I've got a few Opal, yeah.
Hard work. And why did you go there in the first place, for the Opal tip?
Well, I got kicked out of Adelong. I was on the Gold down at Adelong, and I got kicked out of there. Mount Isa Mines took over, and they kicked us all out. So we come up here to the Opal, and, yeah, I've been here ever since.
So when you say there's a lot of people there, what, 10, 100, 1,000, what?
Oh, well, in the summertime, there's probably 80 people here, and then in the wintertime, you'll get 300 or 400 here.
And but what about today? Well. What about for the Yabby races?
Oh, today, the people, I don't know where the people come from, but they're from all over the world. But they're just travelling around, and they get here, and... Yeah,
they must
have a real good day.
They must have heard about the Yabby races. But,
we're fairly well known here for our Opal, and people seem to come back for the Yabby races. We've got a bloke here that brought a Yabby down last year from over the border up in Queensland, and he called his Yabby the Dolphin after Wayne Bennett's rugby league side.
All right, yep.
He ran runner-up last year, and he's coming back this year with the same Yabby to try and win it.
Well, he's probably well-bred Yabby, but it's probably very tempting to eat the...
We eat all the winners. We eat the losers after it,
Oh, dear, that's terrible, Ted. What happened?
I'll tell you another thing, Macca.
Can't you
I think we're the only club in Australia without gambling. We've got no poker machines and no gambling in our club.
There'll be someone gambling. Why can't you rehome these, like they do with greyhounds?
Oh, well, we do. Yeah, we do. Some of them, yeah. If they have people who want them, they take them home. We've got a few dens around here. A lot of them go back into there.
So anyway, Dolphins coming back for another try.
Yeah.
Sounds all right, Teddy. I'll come and see you. I haven't been to Growen, but I'll...
Beautiful spot, Megga.
I've been to Walgett, of course, and Lightning Ridge and Canamble and places around, but they'll probably come from all those places today.
Yeah,
for a good feed of Yabby.
Yeah.
All right, Teddy.
People who get the Yabbies won't tell you where they got them from.
No.
Because they're keeping it quiet.
Why is that? Because it's illegal?
Well, because they want them all for themselves.
I see. All right. All right, Teddy. Good on you.
Thanks, Megga.
See you, mate. Bye. Fiona's in Narrabri. Morning, Fiona.
Morning, Macca. How are you this morning?
I think I'm okay, a bit bewildered. But anyway, apart from that, how are you?
Yeah, great. I'm just heading over to some dressage lessons, actually, over in Gunnedah at Milroy. And with our dressage instructor, Peter Shaw, who comes up from Sydney. He comes up a couple of times. Well, he probably comes up every 8 weeks now and does 3 days up here. So, yeah, very busy. Very much looking forward to the training, which is really good. So, yeah.
Very popular.
Dressage. Yeah.
So you're in Narrabri, but that's on in Gunnedah, did you say?
Yes. So we've loaded the horses up in the float and we're heading over there now. So my lesson's at 8:45, so I'll be there in plenty of time and then can watch a few of the other riders as well, which is really good.
So what do you do with your dressage, Fiona? Where do you go to strut your stuff, as it were?
Yeah, well, we originally started in Queensland and then moved down to New South Wales, probably now 30. And the competition in New South Wales is probably the best in the country. You have the national champions usually come from this area, Sydney area. Mm. So we pretty much travel anywhere in New South Wales. And then I think the national championships for amateur owner riders will be in Melbourne this year. So we do a few competitions down that way as well.
So you get around people near horses. Amazing. I mean, and... Easter's great, isn't it? I mean, it's a great time, and it causes you to think about life and all that sort of stuff. But it's also a great long weekend. People are doing everything, show and shines with their cars, horses, running events.
Yeah,
everybody's
Sydney
doing
Royal.
Something. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. And we've got actually a friend of mine also is showing Chooks this weekend, which is totally a different end of the spectrum.
Exactly. He's showing Chooks. You can't, apparently you can't call them Chooks anymore. They're birds now.
That's right, birds. Yeah, fowl. Yeah.
Well, have a great time, Fiona.
Thanks, Marka.
How many horses have you got? Two.
We've actually got seven at home, but two, most of them are young horses, and my daughter also rides. But I've got, two that are in competition work, so keeps me out of trouble, keeps me broke.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I'd say that, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely, especially being so dry in Narrabri at the moment. It's costing a fortune for hay.
Isn't it amazing?
Let's just hope we get some rain.
And I read the thing before about all the rain that they've had up north. Across the top end and stuff. It's been flooding rains in the Diamantina and Alice
Springs. We just wish it had come further south. I think this year in total we've only had about 40 mils. So,
Need some for the crops too soon, very shortly, I'd say.
Absolutely. Cotton picking's coming up and, certainly winter crops aren't looking too good at the moment.
Good on you, Fiona. Great to talk to you. Good luck.
Thanks, Macca. Bye.
Bye.
Dr. Mark, how are you?
Oh, the fisherman, the big fisherman.
The fisherman. I'm talking about big fisherman. Look, I thought I'd offer, by the way, I think the other honey you were talking about was that Manuka honey, but that's a New Zealand honey.
That's right, yeah.
It's not really Australian.
But as Bart Cummings said, they're all the same bees, mate.
That's probably right. Look, I just thought I'd tell you at the moment off Sydney, off everywhere, there's a fish called mahi-mahi, which is you normally eat in Fiji and in the islands. It's a tropical fish that comes down with Nemo's Eastern Australian Current. They're quite hard to find. They're golden. They're beautiful fish. They go for about 20, 30 kilos. And they're magnificent when you find. You've got to go about 20, 25 kilometres out and get them in secret spots. But they cartwheel all over the place, and the taste of them is incredible. They're like a coral trout and things.
Uh-huh.
But as I said, they come off Sydney from about December till about now. And they go about Easter, but they're fantastic fish to eat, and they're very competitive to get.
Yeah, I'll bet. So you've got to, you don't go out in your kayak, of course. You go out in a big boat to get those, do you?
No, I go out in my five meter, actually New Zealand boat, tinny. I get out there, and there's lots of people out there that.
What,
you know,
25 k's out in a tinny?
Yeah, it's a five. That's 5 meters. It's quite safe, but there's lots of people out there. Certain people get out there and they know and. And you come across people all the time out there. It's just beautiful out there. Yesterday, the water's cobalt blue, comes down from Queensland, just magnificent.
Uh-huh.
And then what happens, these fish get around these things called fads, which are little buoys out there, put out there and for various reasons. And bait fish get around them and think that it's cover, bad mistake, because these pelagic fish, these oceanic fish come around and eat them. And they're always around these fads. And once you find the fad out there, which are not easy to find, then you're normally in with a show. And I catch them on my fly rod. They're quite something.
So what do they call these buoys?
Fads, fish attracting devices, FADs.
And who puts them in? Various?
Sometimes the government does.
Yeah.
And sometimes fish traps, trappers out there will put a trap on the bottom, and then the buoy comes up with a big rope, and that's where they congregate around, basically.
There you go. Now, Dr. Mark, on another thing, I was hearing just recently that the flu season's back, early flu season started. That's what they said, 1,000, you know, was it 25,000 or something? I don't know, cases, I don't know, something.
Yeah, and it's, that's right. If old people can get into trouble, as you know, but young people can as well. Actually, I just got back from Japan, went skiing over there, and I got a terrible dose of the flu. I was flat on my back for about a week. I'm not sure. The problem is the flu, it mutates. And you have the flu shot, and then you've got to keep getting them because the damn thing is very smart and mutates, and it's a different bug. And that's its problem.
So are you sure it was the flu and not another strain of COVID or something? Or?
No. I tested multiple times. It wasn't COVID, and it went away after about a week, and I've been fine. But no, the flu's probably more prevalent now than COVID, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that.
And how do you get that? Do you get that on the plane or being in close contact with people? I thought you'd be out there on your own, some just fishing, you and the fish.
I got my flu in Japan. This kid got on the train and coughed all over me, and I thought, oh no, I'm in trouble here. But no, you get it by coughing. It's by droplet contact normally.
Yeah.
COVID was a bit more virulent. You got it in various ways. And that's what terrified everybody. But the flu, I think, is just basically droplet spread. So you're near somebody who coughs on you, then you get it. Yeah. Hopefully that's tempered by the vaccine, but who knows.
So are you going out into the NEMA's Eastern Australian Current today, are you? Or?
No, I was a bit tired after catching multiple fish yesterday.
I'll pop round later, and I don't know where you live, of course, but I'll pop round for a mahi-mahi.
Yeah, you're very welcome. I gave them to most of the streets. They love them. They're
wow. Very, how big did they grow?
They can grow to 20-30 kilos. The ones we get here, the smaller ones, are about 2-3 kilos, but they grow up to about 10 kilos here.
And they're delish?
Oh, absolutely delicious. They're like a coral trout. They're a real tropical fish that come down in the summer months. They're really special. If you can get onto them. Yeah, no, I'll send you a photo of one of them. They're beautiful. They're golden colour.
I'd come out with you, but I'm not going 25 k's off the coast in a 5-foot tinny or whatever it is.
No,
give me a break.
Five metres.
I need the Queen Mary or the Britannica or something like that. Britannia.
Well,
I mean.
You've got to pick your moment. I'm looking out now at the ocean from my window, and it's absolutely like a mill pond. And that's when I go right out there. You don't go out there in big swell. You're obviously going to probably get into trouble, but it's just gorgeous out there.
Somebody's written to me, emailed me, said, Ian, if you're ever going to Tasmania, always go on a full moon, because when it's a full moon, the sea's pretty flat. I don't know if that's true, but that's what she said.
Oh, I think that's a bit of folklore. I'm not sure about that.
We have to ask a sailor. Okay. Good on you, Dr. Right. Mark.
You take care. See well, you. Maybe I'll, if you want to come out fishing, you're very welcome.
Yeah, okay. In the Britannia. All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I bumped into a bloke called Justin Campbell, the other day. He talks about that and other things. Come and meet him. I'm talking to Justin Campbell. Justin, where are you from?
Canargo, Macca. Yeah,
tell
Canargo.
People where Canargo is.
Between Hay and Denny, southwest New South Wales. Mm. Yeah.
And what do you do there?
I'm general manager of AFA, Australian Food and Agriculture Company, owned by the Bells and Alistair Proven, magnificent people to work for. Yeah, been there with them for 18 years.
And what's happening at the moment?
If you know, it's up for sale. Had a fair bit of interest.
How big is that property?
Well, I'm based at Bunnik, so Bunnik and other properties near us is there about 190,000 acres. Then we've got Bradda Zara on the western side of Denny. It's about 145,000 acres. Then we've got our Hay properties up at Hay. It's roughly also 145,000 acres. And then we've got our properties up at Canamble, Neverway and Wingadee, and they're about 140,000 acres.
Not all for sale?
Yes, yes, the whole company is up for sale, yes.
Wow. Yeah, wow. So, and tell me, for those of us who are not involved intimately in the agricultural pursuit, why does that all happen at once? What's the story?
The Bell family, Colin Bell, passed away a couple of years ago. Mm. He was our managing director. I think just the Bells, it's just a time to move on. There's no children or grandchildren coming through, so they're getting that age, they say, and it's time to hand it over to someone else. But the one with all the properties, you know, it's great diversity. We've got cotton, rice, merino sheep, cattle, dry land crops, so it's a big diversity of all our properties. And we're a magnificent company, great staff, and great places to work on. Yeah,
so they're all owned by one person, but maybe they'll all be bought by different people, or
we don't know yet.
General buy it.
Yeah. I sure had a look 7 years ago. Yeah, the three brothers, the Bells, Andrew, Lewis and Colin, and then Alistair Proven has got a share in it, and American Ray Dalio has got a share in it. So, yeah, interesting times ahead.
I just drove to Adelaide the other day. When I say the other day, a month or two ago, I was amazed at the development and the agriculture along the Hay Plain, and which I hadn't been there for, I don't know, 8 years or 10 years or something. And wow.
Yeah, if you go through Hay, the properties we've got on the Narandra Road, cotton, they're all lasered country, rice, which is all coming up the harvest soon, but the cotton crops look magnificent and the rice looks magnificent this year. You know, 2023 was a bit of a bad year, floods and all that, and it sort of carried on, but yeah, this year's looking magnificent.
Famous names out on the on the Hay Plain, from song, you know, from ashore at Burrabogie and ashore at
yes.
Big Willantra and out in the Coleraine.
But we've still got our sheep out there, the merino sheep, which we all love. It's sheep country, but yes, the cropping along the Murrumbidgee, yes. Cultivating the country's all changed, yes.
So what are you going to do with yourself when that all happens, Justin? You going to get a proper job? Or?
Oh, I love what I do. It's adrenaline every day. We've got magnificent staff. We just have to wait and see who the new owners are, and we'll go from there. But I just love it, yeah.
Well, you should give us a ring one Sunday morning.
Yeah, I'm always... My wife hates me because I just work 7 days, and on the weekends I go out in the ute and just check all the stock. And that's when you don't find any staff, and I put the Macca show on, and I love it, yes.
Good on you, Justin. Great to meet you, mate. Good luck.
Thank you, Macca. Thanks.
This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News, and this week mostly about wool and the people and the growers, the buyers, the sellers who take our wool to the world. And while we no longer ride on the sheep's back, as they used to say, I'll bet you've got some on your back or round your legs or on your feet or on your head or whatever. Wool is the great natural fibre, and the industry's full of passionate people. Come and meet some of them. I'm at the Sydney Royal Easter Show. I'm talking to Jim Michelle, otherwise known as The Yard. Tell me about that, Jim. Why do they call you The Yard?
Well, when I first started in the wool trade, I had a little bit of flair with jewellery and that sort of thing, and that was a bit different to most of the people in the industry, and they thought I looked like the junkyard dog, the wrestler, except he was of a different colour to me.
So you got the nickname The Yard.
The Yard, that's it, and it's stuck. I've been probably 45 years with it.
Jim, where do you base yourself?
Melbourne. We attend most of the auctions in Melbourne, but we're here because it's the Easter show. We decided to come up here and have a look.
Now you get to meet a lot of people. That's what I like about it.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, like it's especially these guys up here. You know, like we're all in competition together, but at the end of the day, I mean, we're mates too. We'll have a beer. We might cost each other a few bob in the room, trying to help the cockies get on a bit better.
I've seen you in operation, Jim. You're Mr. Showbiz, aren't you? Really?
Well, yeah, I think you've got to put on a bit of a show, otherwise you get left behind.
So when did you come to that realisation, mate?
I learned it early, actually. I had a couple of good teachers back in my day. A couple of bosses that had more flair than I had, I thought, but they were a lot higher in the ladder than what I was.
Well, you're buying wool or selling wool or whatever, so I suppose you need everything going for you, don't you, in the wool game?
Well, that's right, especially when you're dealing with the Chinese. You know, sometimes there's some Chinese who are quite conservative, and there's other Chinese who like to see a little bit of flair go into the selling of the wool and that sort of thing. So that's where I fit the bill.
Who else buys?
Well, you've got the Indians. The Indians are buyers. You've got the Eastern Europeans. But, you know, if you look at our business now, it's based around China. China's the majority of it, and the others just sort of like they take the cream off the top, I suppose, if you want to put it that way, yeah. China's our main market, and that's what I've been dealing with China for over 30 years and, you know, established good relationships with a lot of Chinese. It's put me where I am today, put it that way. From time to time, yeah, it's very tough. I mean, the Chinese are very, very tight in their buying of wool, that's for sure. And they're very intelligent people also. And with technology these days, you know, you've got to be up front, otherwise they'll know what you're doing. So I've seen the ups and downs in the industry. I've seen the corporates in the industries. I've seen everything. But I doubt that we will see corporates back in the industry because the fluctuation in the industry is just too great. One year we'll have a good year and then the next six will be bad.
So how did you get into the wool industry? Were you on the farm or what?
No, I'm a city boy and I got a gig in a skin shed. Then all of a sudden I met a bloke at a pub and he said we need a junior wool buyer and that's how I got the gig. So I went to university, I got my degree in wool technology in those days in Melbourne College of Textiles, yeah. Mm. So it was fantastic, you know, for a kid that never seen a sheep in my life, you know. No, it's fantastic. I mean, it is a great, great, great industry, and it's just a shame that we can't get more younger people enthused in it, you know. But the problem with the industry, as I said, it has too many ups and downs, and it's hard to really show young people security in the industry. When I started, it was enormous. You know, it was great. We were, you know, people said, oh, you're a wool buyer. Wow, you know, you're up with the best sort of thing. Well, now I think a forklift driver's better well known than what we are.
But it's also related to fashion and everything too.
Yeah.
So that was exciting too for kids, I suppose.
Yeah, oh, very good. You know, and it still is too. You know, I mean, wool, if you look at wool in general, I mean, being a natural fibre and that sort of thing, it has so many things going for it. And you do become very passionate about it. You know, I know the growers are passionate about what they do and we're passionate about what we do. The hardest thing is to sell it that way, you know. So people really utilise it to its fullest ability. But technology is making it better, I must admit that.
Well, Jim, the yard, it's great to talk to you, mate. Nice to keep up the good work.
Thanks very much, Mac. I appreciate it.
Jim Michelle from Melbourne, who I met at the Sydney Royal Easter Show. And at the show, they've been auctioning wool, which is a wonderful sight to see, but it's a man's world. But it's where I met Sarah Taylor.
I'll be merchant wool service of the catalogue under the usual terms and conditions, like 501 at 960. 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960, 960,
man's world, mostly a man's world these days.
Yes, I actually started a very long time ago in shearing sheds in Queensland when women weren't even allowed in shearing sheds, let alone working in them. But there was just a terrible shortage of wool classes, and I had a wool classes ticket. Yeah, that was back in 1982.
And what do you like about the wool game?
Well, I got into it by accident, actually, because I really wanted to work with cattle. But at Ag College, I put my hand up for wool classing, and then I just fell into it. So after college, I went and worked on a sheep stud, and then I went to Queensland and worked running shearing teams up there. And then I discovered that I was allergic to wool because I had a rash all over me. To get out of the wool industry, I thought I'd go skiing. I got as far as Cooma and I got a job working for a wool broking firm. And I stayed with them for 2.5 years. And I always wanted to break into the buying side of it, but it was a closed shop for girls or women. But there was one man that was a bit of a maverick and he decided to take me on. And that was in 1989. I started in the wool buying game, the exporting game. I actually had to give this part of the game up around 2004 because it was too hard with the young family. And then I went and became a farmer and grew the stuff instead. And I've just been back in this part of the industry for the last 2.5 years.
And what's that been like?
Oh, fabulous. And we're a big family here. All the wool, but there's not a lot of wool buyers, so we all support each other and we all know each other. We really want to try and support the wool growers that are serious about their wool. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of wool growers that I haven't been interested in preparing their wool correctly, and we want to see that change. So I've been through the whole thing, and I understand the whole process, and I understand how difficult it can be for wool growers and what it's like to go through droughts and floods and infestations of flies and everything else. It's not an easy business, and with the fluctuations in prices, but it's not easy for the exporters either because we're dealing with currencies, shipping,
containers.
Yeah, during COVID, we were short on containers, we were short on ships, made it very difficult. So everybody's got their challenges within the industry.
Now tell me about yourself. Anzac Day's coming up and I hear about your father. Interesting.
Someone's got a big mouth.
Tell me the story about Mr. Taylor.
My father, P.G. Taylor, he was a great aviator, was born in 1896 and he flew in the First World War. He was a fighter pilot. When he learnt to fly, he thought it would be fantastic, but he really hated shooting down other people because he felt that aeroplanes should bring the world together, not split the world up. Between the two world wars, he was the first person to fly across the Indian Ocean, charted the route across the Indian Ocean, and later on in the Catalina, charted the first route across the South Pacific. Very pioneering man. He flew a lot with Charles Kingsford Smith. They did the first single-engine flight across the North Pacific to America. There's a lovely book written by a man called Rick Searle called The Man Who Saved Smithy. And all the details about my father are in there. He wasn't a man that would
blow his own trumpet.
No. He wrote about 9 books. And even when you're reading the books, you're on the edge of your seat, but he's just saying, oh, and the aircraft started to go down or the engine stopped or something. But he's very matter-of-fact about it. And he was a very practical man.
What's the story with the Catalina?
Oh, so the Catalina that Daddy flew across the South Pacific on that first flight was donated to the Powerhouse Museum. And has been hanging in the boiler room for 30 years or something, hanging from the ceiling, and it's been enjoyed by numerous people. That aircraft is the first aeroplane to fly across the South Pacific Ocean. It's mind-boggling to think about it.
Well, Sarah Taylor, it's lovely to meet you, and you're enjoying your time back buying wool.
Yeah, we would really love to have lots more young people coming into it.
And how does that happen? Well, Ag College or what?
Well, the federal government had an initiative, it's still going, that you can do a wool classing course for free, which normally costs $10,000 or $12,000. Anyone that's got any interest in being in the wool industry, I'd encourage you to go and do that wool classing course. And then if anyone is interested in getting into this wool trade, then just come to the wool sales and approach some of us, because I know there's people looking for people. Yeah. It's quite generational, and we're starting to get at the wrong end of the stick.
And they sell in Melbourne, they sell in WA, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Great to meet you, Sarah. I've heard all about you.
Thank you so much. It's been great to speak with you.
I'm talking to Don McDonald, wool buyer from Dubbo. How are you, Don?
Good, Macca. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Nice to see all the buyers here. And
yes.
The show.
Look, you know, the market struggled, but they've risen to the occasion today. We've just finished selling. We've grossed a bit over $2 million for the sale. So that's a bit of money injected back into the Western Division. But the important thing that happened today was we had our first of three sales for fundraising for Macquarie Homestay, which is an accommodation facility connected to the hospital. We raised $28,000 today with wool that was donated by the growers. Inflated prices paid by the buyers. So that's a really good start, and the buyers have really got behind it and supported principally by Josh Lamb from Endeavour Wool, who were the one of the largest buyers in the country. He grew up at Cobar and Tilpa. So like me, he's got a genuine interest in seeing the facility in Dubbo where people from the bush can get accommodation next to where they're either receiving treatment, having babies, or have family that are in hospital. So great cause. I think we also realise that out in the bush we've got to scratch each other's back. You know, sometimes people face adversity and it's always community that steps in. You know, and the wool buying and wool brokering industry is a community. It's not the industry it used to be, but it's still a strong community. And the wool buyers today, and many of them have never been to Western New South Wales, but they buy wool there that they send all over the world, put their hands deep in their pockets to raise money today.
Last time I was here at the show, I think there was some wool being sold that was going into a jumper for King Charles or William or something like that.
Some suit cloth there was.
That's right,
actually,
yeah.
Yes. I bought one of those suit lengths and he donated, I think he was given one suit length. He was given 10 lengths of cloth and 9 of them he donated back to the Flying Doctor. And I think they probably raised $40,000 or $50,000 for the Flying Doctor by selling those suit lengths back into the community.
Don, part of your life is involved with AWI. I suppose that's fairly hard. Is it your job is to promote wool, I suppose, around the world? Is that right?
Certainly 60% of AWI's annual spend goes into wool marketing. 1% of global wool's consumed in Australia, so that tells you about 99% of our spend is overseas.
And you would think a lovely renewable resource like wool would sell itself, but obviously that doesn't happen. What's the story around the world?
Well, we think sometimes science gets it wrong, or delivery of science gets it wrong. The Europeans are going through product environmental footprint labelling, a bit like your sort of white goods star rating. And under the methodology that they use, wool doesn't rate well. It doesn't rate as well as polyester, believe that or not.
And polyester's made with fossil fuels.
60% of the apparel market comes from man-made fibres. So
they're using oil.
So they're using oil, that's right. Mm. And AWI and the Woolmark Company did a promotion 2 years ago targeting that, and it was tremendously successful. And it was an awareness campaign to build up the average consumer's understanding of what they're wearing. We're just having trouble convincing the EU Parliament and other European countries to look at it properly and unbiasedly.
And that would cost you a bit too, to do that sort of thing?
Yes, it does. It costs a lot of money. And AWI spent a lot of money in the last few years trying to correct the truths around and have the full life cycle analysis done. And the methodology that the Europeans use conveniently favours man-made fibres because their life cycle analysis stops at the cash register, not end of life. So the renewability, biodegradability, reusability of wool, it stacks very highly, and they're not counting that part of it. So there's a lot of work to be done in that area. The synthetic fibre industry is well-resourced.
Don, how's things in Dubbo?
Not too bad. We've had a little bit of rain around the district. It's still very patchy. It didn't start raining until the end of November, getting quite dire before that, so it's not too bad now. Early crops going in now, and country's being prepared, so there's a lot of diesel being burnt at the moment.
Good morning. Welcome to the program on this Easter Sunday. I hope you're having a happy and safe and holy, whatever suits you today, Easter Sunday. Easter's a great time of the year, I think. I really look forward to Easter for all sorts of reasons. But lots of people out and about, I'll tell you, people are sending me, and I can't keep up with it, but like, for instance, in Kerrang, the quilters, and I mentioned the quilters because my mum was a quilter and a spinner and a weaver. The Kerrang Quilters have got a big weekend at the Kerrang Memorial Hall. That's That's been on this weekend, but it's on today. And there's an art show too at the basketball court in Kerrang. All sorts of things are on. Shane, the commissioner at Tonga, has sent me an email and some pictures of Tonga this morning. Fantastic. Wouldn't you love to be? I've never been to Tonga, but maybe one day. I went to buy a pair of shoes because all my shoes wear out pretty quick the other day. And he said, what size are you? He gave me my size. He said, oh, we've only got three shoes in that. And I said, how come? He said, times are so tough in my shoe store that I'm not just getting any new stock. He said, I'm just keeping my head above water. He said, I'm just paying the bills. So he said, I don't have any money to buy new stock. I don't know if that's a good idea or not, but I suppose you've got to gamble. But then if that's been going for a while, maybe times will get better. But in his particular business, he's in the city. He wasn't buying any new things. And I got a taxi the other day, and I always asked the taxi drivers, how's business? Oh, you know, a bit slow, you know, Easter, duddly dum. And he said, we can't put our price. Are you Uber? He said, Uber and the cost of hotels, because we had a call this morning from Kay. I think she was in St. George's Basin. You'll find that on your maps. And her daughter went to Townsville to see Pink. And she said it was just fantastic in Townsville. She said it was pink everywhere. The whole place was littered with pink. And she said it was just a great atmosphere. But Pink has been around the place, and so has Taylor Swift, of course. And the cost of – isn't it amazing how when something like that, the cost of rooms and accommodation and food and all that sort of stuff just goes through the roof. And I'll say Pink and Taylor Swift took a bundle of money out of Australia. But that's fine. People wanted to see them, and that's their privilege. Also, I was at the Royal Easter Show in Sydney, which is on at the moment. People were telling me about the dogs, the problem with wild dogs. And in Victoria, Dave says the Victorian Allan government ended wild dog control on private and public land in the northwest of Victoria. You're not permitted to control wild dogs without a costly, complicated and time-consuming permit process. There's a danger, he says, that this will extend to the rest of Victoria, where the wild dog numbers continue to wreak carnage on livestock. If you've ever seen animals, particularly sheep, attacked by wild dogs, and there's no keeping back wild dogs. We had that little vignette the other day about alpacas. They kill foxes and things like that, but dogs hunt in packs of 3, 5, 10, and nobody's got any chance against them. The other thing I wanted to mention, well, there's a lot of things I need to mention this morning, but my friend and great journalist, sporting journalist, but he wrote books about all sorts of things, Ian Heads, passed away the other day. He's been sick for a while. Ian is routinely in here bringing all sorts of people in. He's written lots of books, I think 30 books about all sorts of things. And he's just you've got people in your life, have you? Just a nice bloke. Frankie Misson's another bloke, you know, former fast bowler. They're the same. They're just, I don't know, they don't take nice pills. They're just nice people. And Ian Heads was just like that. And a great journo. I remember when I was, for a year or two, I did Around the Grounds, the football, I'd say, I don't know, in the 1990s, but, and I'd do it after like Sunday and I'd go and it nearly killed me, but that was when there was, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 games on Sunday afternoon, and they'd go around the grounds and so on and so on. At Redfern Oval, Ian Heads, and at Parramatta Macca. And so you'd go, but Ian used to do that, and we got to know one another. And Ian's written a lot of books, lovely man. And as I said, you've probably got lovely people in your life too. They're just so self-effacing, and you meet them, and the first thing you say, how are you? Yeah, good, but look, how are you? And how's the family? And how's the... They're all, and Ian Heads was just like that, and he wrote lots of books, and he brought Arthur Beetson in here, and Bobby McCarthy, I think, and Georgie Piggins came in, and all sorts of people came in, and his writing men, friends like Larry Reiter, etc., they'd come in, and we'd talk about sport and sport generally. Ian wrote a book, or one of the books he wrote was called The Night the Music Died. And it's really it's like the Takeover Target story. You know, Takeover Target, the horse that cost $1,000 and wins the King's Stand in Melbourne, plus a lot of Group 1s here in Australia. And The Night the Music Died is about a two-bit football team. When I say two-bit, they're not. It wasn't a big professional turnout, and they won what was called the AMCO Cup in that time. And Ian signed it inside. just says lovely things. I hope you enjoy this track down a time tunnel. And it was about a film, Western Division football team, coached by a bloke called Johnny King, who I think was probably one of the best wingers. He's a good coach too. I don't know why he didn't continue his coaching career, but he was one of the best wingers I ever saw. Not only could he was fast, he could tackle, he could aggressively tackle, but he was always in position. He was always, and you'll see in the where the wingers just completely in the wrong place at the wrong time. Not John King. He was just Johnny on the spot. But the book's called The Night the Music Died, and it's a great little Aussie story. I recommend it. You'll probably find it in your library. It came, look, that was about when Ian wrote that. Was the 90s sometime, was it? No, 2014 he wrote that. It was only 6 years ago. 10 years ago, sorry. Doesn't time fly? But sad to see the passing of Ian. Glad to have known him, as a lot of people. Everybody in the journalist world would know Ian. Lovely man. The Night the Music. Have a look for The Night the Music Died. It's great yarn. You don't have to know rugby league to find it. It's adversity against the best. You know, the best and the biggest. And they played the Poms and they did all sorts of things. It was a very lovely story. Art show. I'm getting all these things about what's on. Because Easter's the time for lots of things, and certainly times when people get together. Walhalla Mechanics Institute, there's another story. Art shows. Art shows on everywhere. We'll talk to you. Our number's 1300 700 222. G'day, this is Macca.
Good morning, Macca. It's Samuel here from Borroloola.
Well, g'day, Samuel. How you going?
Yeah, good, mate. It looks like only the rain's gone, but there's clouds building up and the sun's trying to come out.
Dear, oh dear, you've had a lashing, haven't you?
Yes, we did. Most of our people came back yesterday with four big buses and from Darwin, and some of the oldies come back on the army plane.
Yeah, how much rain have you had there, do you reckon, Samuel?
Oh, geez, we had the biggest of rain, Macca. The floods came way up and some of the houses got inundated, you know, from floods. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was up to the 2001 level.
Yeah, and it was a late wet. You hadn't had some rain for a while, had you? And then here's the wet season coming in March.
Yeah, no, we didn't have much rain last year, but this year our bridges went underwater. The one that they raised through the other half of the town, it went underwater this year. After 4 years, it didn't go under.
Yeah, and is much damage to houses and things, Sam?
No, only a few trees, Macca. Only some of the house went underwater, but it's not really much damage. I'm going out to my homeland today to have a look at my air station on one of the islands and see what damage is out there, because it was in the path of the cyclone.
This is Megan, the cyclone. Is that the one?
Yeah, Cyclone Megan. Yeah, I've got to go and take some photos of some of the place on the islands today. Me and my cousin going out for the day.
And you go out in your little boat, do you?
Yeah, I've got a 5.2-metre dinghy with a 60 on it.
I'd love to come with you, mate. Did you say there's a bit of cloud around still? Or?
Yeah, it's trying to clear up. The sun's trying to come out, yeah, and a lot of people catching barramundi too, Macca.
You're just saying that to make us jealous, Samuel. Get off. All right, mate. Good on you. Nice to talk to you, mate.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Macca.
I'll see you in Borroloola sometime, okay?
Hopefully, yeah. Thank you.
Okay, mate. Good on you. Bye. Kent's in Urala. Good morning, Kent.
Hi, Macca. I've never spoken to anybody in a suit of armour before.
Well, no, figuratively speaking, Kent. What's happening in Urala, mate? What are you doing?
Well, that fellow was talking about the cost of pink. Well, we get pink and orange and yellow and purple, all for free here because it's autumn.
Yes, exactly. Beautiful. And has it cooled down, has it already?
It's just starting to. It's called autumn.
Yeah.
I wanted to tell you about a big event here in Yarralla next Sunday. It's to celebrate the change of the name of a local park. It's currently called Hampton Park, which is named after the huge park in Glasgow. And no one's ever worked out why Yarralla has a park called that. But next Sunday, it's to be renamed Sonny Jim Mackay Park. Now, Sonny Jim Mackay, or James Mackay, was a young cricketer who started playing for Yarralla at the age of 16, and at the age of 16 began to score centuries. In 1899, he went off to Burwood Club in Sydney, now called Wests, and immediately set about scoring hundreds on what was new to him, turf wickets. At one stage, his average for Burwood was 108 for the season.
Wow.
And his average for New South Wales was 112. He was just a phenomenal cricketer. Unfortunately, he wasn't chosen to go on the Australian tour in 1905, but he was offered a job in South Africa at a diamond mine because the owner of the diamond mine was a South African cricket fanatic. So off James Mackay of Yarralla went to South Africa and immediately began to top scoring for Transvaal, and they were even talking about selecting him for South Africa to tour to England. Then they had a change of heart. Well, that's a bit rude. He's only been here 6 months. Walking home from his job one afternoon, he was knocked down by a motorcycle and his eyesight never recovered. So his career was over.
That was knocked down over there in Africa, South Africa.
Walking home from a diamond mine in near Johannesburg. He was almost killed, but he survived, but his eyesight never recovered. Now, his nickname was Sonny Jim because of his always cheerful nature, even though I should tell you that while he was playing in South Africa, the South African press labelled him as the best batsman in the world.
Wow. Maybe it's just me, but I've never heard of Sonny Jim Mackay, but he sounds like a wonder.
Indeed he was. So his career was over, but finally Yarralla's agreed to name the park where he first started knocking up his hundreds.
Well, isn't that great? I think that's wonderful because, as my mate says, and I always think about it all the time when I think of what happens today, if you forget your past, you've got Alzheimer's. That's the only reason to forget your past. No other reason. You should always remember your history. Sonny Jim Mackay, eh? How good's that?
And there's another little I should add to this. The event is being sponsored by Yarralla Historical Society, which owns Macross's Mill Museum, where there is an exhibition about him called Sonny Jim Mackay, Best Batsman in the World. And one of our sponsors has donated $3,000 as a purse for these. Oh, it's a veterans cricket match, I should point out, a 40-40 game. And she's donated $3,000 purse to be donated to the local Friends of McMoore Gardens, which is our aged care units. So that's a bit of incentive for the old fellas, as they call themselves. That's a bit of a worry. They call themselves the old fellas to come out and play 40-40 game to raise $3,000 for charity.
Lovely story, Kent. It just reminded when you said he hadn't seen a turf pitch. I remember when I was playing cricket and I'd play at school, you know, I was in second year, third year, and we always played on cement pitches, not even matting, but we played on cement pitches with these hard composition balls. And then I went to try out for the St. George Green Shield side when that's under 16, and all of a sudden I started playing on I'd never seen her, and it was just, you know, I couldn't cope with it. I thought, I'd never seen a turf pitch before. I can appreciate what Sonny Jim was.
So hard to cope with that when the ball floats off a turf wicket, doesn't go crack off the bloody matting.
Exactly. Or off the cement, it's even worse. The cement just does nothing, and it's, oh God. Anyway, that's great. So the Sonny Jim Mackay Park in Yarralla next weekend.
In Yarralla, next Sunday.
Good on you, Ken.
10 o'clock till 4:30, free admission.
Thanks, mate. Good on you.
All the best.
See you. Bye. Oh, Johnny Quayle's online. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Ian.
How are you? John Quayle, ladies and gentlemen, a long-time rugby league player and administrator for many years for the Australian Rugby League. And now it's one who's not picking grapes. You're up in the Hunter Valley of New South Wales, John. Good morning.
It's fair to hear, man. I just had a couple of words of Mr. Taylor, who has a wonderful winery and brand down there in South Australia. But we're like us again. We've finished vintage and it all went well. You naturally were going to call in, but promises, promises.
Come on, cut me some slack, please.
But I heard you were talking about our dear friend Ian Heads, and I just wanted to say what great words you said about him, and what a wonderful person he was. He was so good to me, Ian, that he was the one person who knew so much about the history of the game. Not only did he write about it, he was able to teach us what it meant, and it was such a valuable lesson to me. I know that the young journalists today, we hear how he mentored them. And knowing that you work with him alongside of him, I just think it was a wonderful tribute. And the other key thing he used to say when he'd stay here with me or trip around, he loved going on a Sunday morning because the main reason was so he could listen to Macca. And I thought he'd always used to say to me, "Oh, did you hear Macca on Sunday?" And as you and I know, what a wonderful journalist he was. And just what a wonderful person he was. And it's again another sad day.
Yeah, and a steadying, sort of almost, because you know above all what sort of a political and internecine joint rugby league or football generally is. And he was sort of like a steadying influence. He didn't seem to be, he had his opinions, but he was a steadier to me. When you talk to Ian, you'd get the facts, if you know what I mean. You'd get the facts. If you asked him something, he'd tell you, and he'd tell you a bit of history, and he'd, yeah. So he was just a wonderful fellow. But and he'd come in here. We came in here with Arthur one morning, and some morning came in with Bobby McCarthy, just footballers, and he wrote books about all sorts of things. But I really love that book, The Night the Music Died, about the Western Division. That's a great story, isn't it?
And he went back, he'd love to go back just to talk to the guys that played in that wonderful series at that particular time and winning it. And you're right about another interesting comment he used to make to me was that, "Have you ever been in there to Macca's studio?" And I said, "No, but we talk often." He said, "I don't know how it operates." He said, "It's chaos every time I go in there." But how he does it. But he used to quietly then say, without any criticism, "But isn't it wonderful that the program can still go on?" And that's what he was
despite Macca, yeah.
Despite the chaos in there, he'd always say, just quietly, and he used to always say to me, I was very fortunate to have him as a mentor to me, and I used to use him as a sounding board. I'd say things like, "What do you think of expansion? You think we should go outside? Should we bring Brisbane in?" And he was always able to give me a direct answer. And if he didn't agree, it was always in a way that you thought, "I better rethink that." Mm. Or then he'd ring up some many times and say, "I think that's a very good decision." And so I just know that in all the journalists of our time and our past, what a wonderful gentleman he was. And as you've so well put it, you were able to work with him as I did, and such a wonderful gentleman.
A touch of the Jack Gibsons about him. I think he's been poorly advised. something when he's asked about a certain decision. Without being critical, he'd give you an answer, but it'd make you, as you say, go back and think all about it.
Well, he would, and as I said, he just loved you and loved the program, and it was a wonderful tribute. So, as I said to Kel, promises, promise us all.
I hate making promises, but I tell everybody I'm going, because I'd love to go there, but I will come and see you, John. I wanted the harvest to be over so I didn't have to do any work. But now that's...
Well, that's that's right. But harvest is over. A lot of physical work starts, and that's
really?
I would introduce you to a shovel or a crowbar, which is something you probably never held. So that'd be the exciting thing for you.
John, great to talk to you, mate. Thanks for that lovely tribute to Ian. Lovely fella.
And have a happy Easter.
Yeah, you too, mate. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
G'day, Macca. This is Amber calling from Northcote in Victoria.
G'day, Amber.
How are you going, Macca?
I'm good. I'm for this Easter. It's been lovely weather where I am. I hope it's been good with you. You're in Northcote.
Yeah, Northcote at the moment, but I've been interested in hearing you talk about Stall Easter Gift because I'm heading up to Stall tomorrow to watch the final.
Are you a runner?
I wish I was, Macca, but I'm far from it. But my family have been giving the medal in the Stall gift for over 100 years. So I get the honour tomorrow to present it to both the female winner and the male winner.
Oh, right. Amber, what's the family name?
Family name is Earl. Mm. And it was, first of all, my great-grandfather who gave the medal, and then my grandfather and my uncle, and I'm the first woman in the family to present the medal, and I'm really proud to do that.
Yeah, and Amber, why the Earls? Why are they presenting the medal? Were they found the store gift, or what? What's the story?
I think back in the day, there was a time where they needed prize money. Obviously, it's always had great prize money, the Stall Easter gift. But it was my great grandfather Darby Earl who decided that he wanted to cast the medal and give it to the winner. At the time, it was only the men who were running, of course. Mm, but yeah. Now there are two medals that I've got ready to take up tomorrow to give to the winners.
So, who's the do we know the favourite? Who the favourites are, or?
Well, it's a hard one always, but I had the winners of the heats. So they had the heats yesterday, and then they have the semi-finals Monday morning, and then the winners of the semi-finals go straight into the finals about 2 hours later. So it's an action-packed day. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So it's electric at Central Park installed tomorrow. It's really a great day.
Oh, it is. We did our program there, and I always wanted to go, but we were there about, when was that, Kel? About 15 years ago at least, probably early 2000s, and it was just so exciting. We had a crowd of people there, and we met Charlie Booth, who was this little old bloke who was 96 or something at the time. He's probably more 98 because he died at 101, and he just told us wonderful stories about how his dad, because Charlie he's only a little fella, you know, he's like about 5'6", 5'7". And everybody had come from everywhere, and people who'd been in the Stall gift in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. And it's just wonderful. And Charlie was a runner, but he invented, or his father invented, the two of them, the starting block. So, and there was there was this big bloke there from America, a big African-American, and and Charlie said, I bet I can beat you, over 30 metres. So, yeah. And the bloke said, no, you'll never beat me. So they did. But Charlie had the starting blocks, and he took them back to America, and thereby, that's what the tale Charlie told me. But they're just lovely stories. And then we met this bloke from Adelaide who had a system to win money, you know, because it was about gambling, because professional. So it was just really exciting, Amber. It was just a great day. People from all over. There was these two kids from Sydney Uni, and they were in dressing gowns, and there was people with, you know, who had prosthetic legs, and it was just, it was fantastic. We should go back.
Oh, look, I think, Macca, there's often the same families that go back every year, you know, to catch up when they head to Stall. So it's a great family event.
So, Amber, I reckon you'll be on the news, because I'm going to watch it tomorrow. Tomorrow night, and there'll be a picture of you presenting the medal.
There will, and I'll give you a special wave, Macca.
Good on you, Amber. So how's things in – you got good weather in Melbourne?
Yeah, it's a bit cloudy today. It's a bit smoky. I'm not quite sure why, but they're expecting it to be better later in the day. So lots of chocolate in the morning, and then get out and burn it off in the afternoon.
Good on you, Amber. Good luck. Nice to talk to you.
All right. Thanks, Macca.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.